So we're turning to the reading now. So it's a longish reading, the John 9 story. Walking down the street, Jesus saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, causing him to be born blind?" Jesus said, "You're asking the wrong question. You're looking for someone to blame. There's no such cause-effect here. Look instead for what God can do. We need to be energetically at work for the one who sent me here, working while the sun shines. When the night falls, the workday is over. For as long as I am in the world, there is plenty of light. I am the world's light." He said this and then spat in the dust, made a clay paste with the saliva, rubbed the paste on the blind man's eyes, and said, "Go, wash at the pool of Siloam." Siloam means sent. The man went and washed and saw. Soon the town was buzzing. His relatives and those who year after year had seen him as a blind man begging were saying, "Why, isn't this the man we knew who sat here and begged?" Others said, "It's him all right." But others objected, "It's not the same man at all, it just looks like him." He said, "It's me, the very one." They said, "How did you get your eyes opened?" "A man named Jesus made a paste and rubbed it on my eyes and told me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' I did what he said. When I washed, I saw." "So where is he?" "I don't know." They marched the man to the Pharisees. The day when Jesus made the paste and healed his blindness was the Sabbath. The Pharisees grilled him again on how he had come to see. He said, "He put a clay paste on my eyes and I washed and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "Obviously, this man can't be from God. He doesn't keep the Sabbath." Others countered, "How can a bad man do miraculous, God-revealing things like this?" There was a split in their ranks. They came back to the blind man. "You're the expert. He opened your eyes. What do you say about him?" He said, "He is a prophet." The Jews didn't believe it. Didn't believe the man was blind to begin with. So they called the parents of the man, now bright-eyed with sight. They asked them, "Is this your son, the one you say was born blind? So how is it that he now sees?" His parents said, "We know he is our son, and we know he was born blind, but we don't know how he came to see. Haven't a clue who opened his eyes. Why don't you ask him? He's a grown man and can speak for himself." His parents were talking like that because they were intimidated by the Jewish leaders who had already decided that anyone who took a stand that this was the Messiah would be kicked out of the meeting place. That's why his parents said, "Ask him, he's a grown man." They called the man back a second time, the man who had been blind, and told him, "Give credit to God. We know this man is an imposter." He replied, "I know nothing about that one way or another, but I know one thing for sure. I was blind. I now see." They said, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? I've told you over and over and you haven't listened. Why do you want to hear it again? Are you so eager to become his disciples?" With that, they jumped all over him. "You might be a disciple of that man, but we're disciples of Moses. We know for sure that God spoke to Moses, but we have no idea where this man even comes from." The man replied, "This is amazing. You claim to know nothing about him, but the fact is he opened my eyes. It's well known that God isn't at the beck and call of sinners, but listens carefully to anyone who lives in reverence and does his will. That someone opened the eyes of a man born blind has never been heard of, ever. If this man didn't come from God, he wouldn't be able to do anything." They said, "You're nothing but dirt. How dare you take that tone with us?" Then they threw him out in the street. Jesus heard that they'd thrown him out and went and found him and asked him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" The man said, "Point him out to me, sir, so that I can believe in him." Jesus said, "You're looking right at him. Didn't you recognize my voice? Master, I believe." The man said, and worshipped him. Jesus then said, "I came into the world to bring everything into the clear light of day, making all distinctions clear, so that those who have never seen will see, and those who have made a great pretense of seeing will be exposed as blind." Some Pharisees overheard him and said, "Does that mean you're calling us blind?" Jesus said, "If you were really blind, you would be blameless. But since you claim to see everything so well, you're accountable for every fault and failure." So Jesus, in his own description of his ministry, says he's come into the world to enable people to see and to make things clear. So by that own description, we would be right in saying, let's not only think about this as a healing of a man born physically blind. Let's think about this more broadly, because Jesus himself gives us a broader perspective. And so I'm going to be journeying us through both a focus on the healing event, but then also a broader appreciation, which is clearly what Jesus would want us to do, because he has made it clear he's the light of the world and he is trying to make things clear. Help us to see things that we may often be overlooking. And so I'm calling this Invitations to See. Helen Keller, who was born, no, she wasn't born blind. She became blind and deaf when she was just short of 2 years old. Blind and deaf, and she was born around 1880, lived about till 1950, thereabouts. A remarkable woman, blind and deaf her whole life, and she was the first woman in the world to get a bachelor degree. So that's quite something. She was asked this question: what's worse? What could be worse than being blind? And she answered, "To have sight without vision." To have sight without vision. So we're all people with sight here, and I hope then to give us insight and something of the vision I think Jesus wants us to see in this passage. So the first thing that I think is important for us is that we are invited to see what God can do. We are invited to see what God can do. So I hope you remember this flyer, and I'm not sure if there's stock outside. There should be. But this we made a big fuss of in the early part of this year, because this is a reading plan for this year, so that each of us is able to do the readings that the Sunday we'll be focusing on, to do those readings before the Sunday. And so this is my copy, and I keep it with my journal for my daily devotions. And so on Monday of this week, in my personal devotions — I wasn't doing sermon prep — my personal devotions, I read the gospel reading. And there was something really heavy on my heart, a really difficult situation that was worrying me. And with that on my heart, I started reading, and I couldn't get past verse 5. I got to verse 5, and the devotion, well, the reading came to a stop. And In verse 5 was this statement of Jesus to his disciples, who had asked, you know, "Why is this guy blind? Who is to blame?" Jesus said, "Look instead for what God can do." Wow! You know, as I'm struggling with this situation, And burdened by how intractable it seems to be, how, you know, unresolvable, the statement, look instead at what God can do. So that was really meaningful. Now, I hadn't got to the end of the passage, and so the next day, instead of moving on to the next reading, I was back in John chapter 9, and again, verse 5. You know, look instead at what God can do. And there was then more layers for me personally of what it was saying to me. And then Wednesday, the same. So for 3 days in my devotions, the only reason why I got past verse 5, I think, this week was because I had to do sermon prep eventually and read to the end. Otherwise, I would maybe still be there. It's just this powerful thing of saying, as you look at difficult situations, and I pass that on to you now, look instead at what God can do. Try and pray for insight, pray for faith about what can God do in this situation. Because it's an invitation that opens us up to be aware of possibilities that God can bring into a situation. Of course, God has resources available to God's self that we don't have. And God is involved in people's lives and we don't know, you know, and God can make connections that we're not aware of, and God can make new things then happen. And I just found that so encouraging. So encouraging. And that through God, things can turn out better than seems possible for us. And so I really want to offer this to you and say, In the difficult situations we face, ask God, what can you do in this situation? Can you perhaps give me sight to see what can you do in this situation? Keep believing God can work in this situation. And sometimes that doesn't mean that things turn out as we want them to, but it certainly, one will always be able to see how God has brought good out of the situation. There's nothing that God can't bring good out of. Sometimes it doesn't end as we would love it to end. But God's involvement in a situation will always mean that good can come from it. Good that we perhaps couldn't have anticipated. So keep asking, God, what can you do? What can you do through me? What can I do? What possibilities are there? Inspire me about possibilities, and obviously we need to be willing to be involved. So the situation that was really troubling me as I was doing my devotion was just our South African crisis and how just overwhelmed we are with the constant load shedding, and how one has that sense again, just that social upheaval is, you know, really likely and imminent. And it's just so scary. And I remember just before the 2021 social upheaval that one had that sense in the air then, that before it happened, that, you know, things could burst at any moment. We just felt like a nation about to burst. And one has that feeling again. And one's anxious because, you know, of tomorrow, and is that going to be a catalyst to widespread social upheaval? And so I was really overwhelmed, and this message, look instead at what God can do. And so as we reflect on that a little bit more, I want to say, note that this blind man is at the beginning of the story a non-character. And by that I mean, you know, he doesn't ask to be healed. He's just there completely on the periphery. And he becomes, for the disciples, just an object on which to start the next conversation with Jesus. So they say, oh, there's a blind man, you know, let's ask an interesting theological question. So he's in a sense, he hasn't made himself part of the story, he's really on the fringe, you know, not, he's part of the crowd, people have passed him all the time. By the end of the story, the John 9 story, he's healed, he has found his voice. He is taking a stand against the much-feared Pharisees who have complete power over everyone in terms of their religious life. He has agency, he has influence, He's no longer passive. He's now actively showing the Pharisees, for example, the weaknesses of their own argument and their own attack. And I found that very helpful to reflect on, because as I reflect on the South African situation, I can't see somebody who's going to lead us into, you know, a better calming of the situation at the moment and a better social cohesion as a nation. I can't see it. But the story says, hey, John, notice that somebody who was on the periphery and not noticed by anyone became the central character, the person with agency, was empowered by God. So who knows, John, who God can still empower? Who knows whose eyes God can open, who will become a central character in our country and in our communities, and lead us into a better place? Keep asking, what can God do in the situation? Yes, I might not have the eyes to see it, but God can be at work. And I just found that so incredible. I want to quickly tell you a story. And I love stories where unexpected things happen. The exceptional, the out of the ordinary, the least expected. And of course, such stories are part of life. They do happen, and they can be particularly precious in the kingdom and in the sense of how we serve God. But they are part of life. And so this story just really amazed me. We visited a farm a few years ago, and on this farm in Wartfall Unde, there was a sheep. If you want to just show the picture of the sheep. And this sheep had a name, Yapi. Yapi had been purchased some years previously in order to be fattened up for slaughter by the... You know, and he'd been, there were a whole lot of sheep the farmer bought, all of them to be fattened up for slaughter. But Yapi stood out. Yapi made friends with the farmer. When the sheep would go off, Yapi would stay behind to talk to the farmer. And Yapi would come to the kitchen door and talk to everyone in the kitchen. So they couldn't slaughter Yapi. But Yapi got a name. 4 years later, Yapi is big and fat and very much flourishing on the farm. So, I mean, think about that. Here's a sheep who gets purchased for slaughter with other sheep, but doesn't get slaughtered. I mean, it's a really unexpected turn out of events. When you go to that farm and you ask for the Wi-Fi password, what's the Wi-Fi password? Yapi! This farm is dedicated to Yapi now, who was meant to be slaughtered. I just tell that because it's kind of memorable and can just say to us, you know, amazing things can happen in life. Don't give up. Look instead at what God can do. And then just a quick aside also for those who are following, and I do encourage everyone to be following with my the reading list. The 1 Samuel 16 reading for this week, where Samuel is sent to anoint the new king. Notice in that he isn't given the whole game plan. He's just told, go to that place, you know, there'll be somebody to anoint. And he doesn't know who's going to anoint. So he does that, takes that step. Then, you know, God says, do this. And he says, does that. Still doesn't know who's going to anoint, you know. And then, so he has to be faithful each step of the way. Eventually, David is there in front of him, and the Spirit of God says, anoint that man to be the next king. So that's also how we need to be open to how God works in these things, is that it can happen step by step. So I want us to now move on and do what I did promise to also do, is to be invited to see Jesus as healer. If you were living in Jesus' day and when Jesus was ministering, there would have been something amazing that was the talk of the town and the talk of the area. And that was that somebody had the power to heal people. And I want us to appreciate that was very new, exceptional news. Very new, exceptional news. Because healing ministry was essentially unheard of until Jesus. Even in the story, it says, we've never heard of anyone healed from blindness. There were not healers around. Maybe occasionally, if you look at past centuries, you know, there were one or two instances of healing. But somebody actually having healing power and like on an almost daily basis practicing healing was completely exceptional. The only ministry close to it that did exist at the time, amongst others, was exorcism, the driving out of demons. There were exorcists, and Jesus was also an exorcist. But healing ministry, not. So as we study Jesus and his times and that context then, healing ministry was a new thing to the world, and it came with Jesus. And the reason why the stories of Jesus' healings are kept for us and recorded in the Gospels so that we may read them is because those who wrote the Gospels, and remember they wrote the Gospels some decades after Jesus' ministry, had discovered that the healing ministry continued in the name of Jesus. So people still in the name of Jesus were healed. And so they said, well, we better, you know, keep telling the stories of how Jesus healed, because this is carrying on. It's still part of life in the kingdom. And so our faith as we come to the story needs to be encouraged around Jesus as healer. And certainly in my ministry, right throughout my ministry, I have been aware of various ways in which God has been at work healing. Just very recently, somebody we've been praying for, a member, but also a friend of ours, their son had had an enormous breakdown at the end of his schooling. Complete mental breakdown. And there were addiction issues as well. So serious, psychologists and psychiatrists said he will never be okay again. But they believed that, you know, healing was possible. And it took a long time. It took like 2 intense years of various forms of treatment and institutionalizing and getting over the addiction and various creative things that they did as a family to put him back together again. But he is now healed. He's now at university studying. And as I reflected on the story and the journey of the story, I could just see how the Spirit of God was at work all along to keep them believing that it was possible and keep giving them ideas of how to work for healing. And that's how the Spirit is at work, and how Jesus, often does do healing, is that it's through the faith of those around and keep looking for options, how healing can be at work. Keep believing, keep trusting. And don't think, as I said it earlier, and I must say it again, because I know some of us have lost loved ones who we wished would have been healed, but they passed on. So it doesn't always end as we want it to. Illness and disease and fatal illnesses and all of that is part of life as well. It doesn't mean we are spared that. But the reality of that mustn't prevent us from seeing Jesus as a healer and how Jesus can be at work to bring healing and to make progress in situations and bring a lot of remarkable good. So we're invited to see opportunities now. So I've already spoken to the importance of seeing the opportunities, but the urgency. I want to help us see the urgency. When you read, and if you read the Gospels and if you read the New Testament, you'll notice urgency is in the air on every page. Like they feel things are urgent and action is needed. And even in this passage, to the Ephesians passage, Paul is writing to the Ephesians, and he uses phrases like, get on with it, don't waste your time. This is the passage James read at the beginning. Don't waste your time, get on with it, make the most of every chance you get. These are desperate times, Paul says. So there's urgency. And Jesus in this passage, the John 9 passage, says, you know, it's light now, but darkness is coming. We have to work now while there's light. Because the darkness is going to come and then we can't work. So urgency, urgency, urgency. So there's really an importance that within each one of us, we don't say, oh yeah, that's an interesting idea about looking for opportunities and how I can maybe be part of the solution, but I'll put it in the back of my mind and journey with it. Yesterday I was using a water bottle. I'm not sure who in the family's water bottle it was, but it's got words all the way down, and it was procrastinate, 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 and the last line was panic! So Jesus would say, don't procrastinate. Just look for the opportunity, see how you can be part of the solution. And of course, as we think about the country, each of us needs to be saying, how can I be part of the solution? How can I be part of the solution now? And as you reflect on your life, please can I also say, you know, the importance of interceding, praying for South Africa before the storm. Don't, oh boy, there's social upheaval, let me start praying. No, pray now, be praying. Pray that we are being protected from widespread social upheaval. If there's a journey in which healing is needed, ask what is the next steps needed for healing. If you're needing to say sorry to somebody, take the opportunity to say sorry. If you're needing to admit to something, take the opportunity to admit. If there is addiction, don't delay to admit the addiction and to start the path of recovery. Take the opportunity to make right. If you have members of your family who are senior members, aged members, make time for them. If you still have children at home, make time for them. Make time to grow. Make time to study. Make time to learn. Make time for daily habits like the daily devotions, life-giving habits, and others. Okay, we're going to stop there.